of the demon Hiranyaksha. Okay, you don't have to look at the board. Okay, it's going to shut off any minute now. Okay, good. All right. So the story of Lord Varaham is king of the demon Hiranyaksha. You've probably heard it a few times, if not many times. But still, as many things in Krishna consciousness, because it's spiritual sound vibration, if you listen very attentively, it won't be boring. And in fact, you'll find newer and newer nectar every single time you hear. And in fact, in the end of the story of the appearance of Lord Varaha, there are so many benedictions given, as there is the Shuti Phal, the fruit of hearing about that. There's so many wonderful glories of benedictions that one might receive from hearing the glories sung of the Lord, and Lord Varaha in particular. But actually, the real fruit is that we develop our attraction and our loving service to the Lord. And that's the real fruit that we want from hearing. So when you start the story of Lord Varaha, you have to kind of think, where in the universe do you want to start this story? Because Srimad Bhagavatam depicts the story of Lord Varaha across many cantos. And it's mentioned in the second canto, it's mentioned in the third canto, in various parts. And the Acharyas explain, Srila Prabhupada explains that when Vidura and Maitreya, Vidura and Maitreya, thank you. When Vidura and Maitreya were talking, that Maitreya, he condensed the story of Lord Varaha. Because actually, did you realize that there are two incarnations of Lord Varaha? So one came in one millennium, in the Chakshushan millennium. That was Shveta Varaha, the white Varaha. He came in the Swayambhuva millennium. And at that particular time, Srila Prabhupada explains that the earth had lost its balance. The ability of the earth to float in the air has a balance. The Lord has arranged this particular balance. And due to, Srila Prabhupada indicates that Hiranyaksha was digging gold at the time. He was mining gold. And he was mining so much gold that he disturbed the balance of the earth. And although it usually remains floating in the air, it fell. It lost its balance and fell into the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. And so, what happened was, way back in the beginning of creation, when Lord Brahma was creating the universe, he was creating the different living entities and their different their jobs that they had to do to help maintain the universe. So he created his sons from different parts of his body, he created the demigods and this and that. And then he created Swayambhuva Manu. So Swayambhuva Manu came, and as the son of Lord Brahma, he came to Lord Brahma and he said, "Oh my dear father, what would you have me do? What is my duty? What is my duty?" And Lord Brahma said, "Oh my dear son, it's so nice. Everyone should have a good son like you that's willing to take the instructions of their father so rigidly. And but all I want you to do is create progeny. Create progeny and take care of them. Because if you become a good king like that, then that'll be a great service to mankind." So Swayambhuva Manu looked around and said, "Well, where should I work? Because I'm supposed to be working on the earth planet, but look, it's not there. I found that, would you mind not doing the slideshow, Keshava Guru? Because I found that some people are way too distracted by that. And it's distracting to me to watch them looking there. Thank you." Okay, shh. Okay, so the earth had fallen into the ocean, thrown to the moon, and didn't know where he was supposed to create his progeny. And he said to Lord Brahma, "Well, what should I do?" And Lord Brahma said, "Oh, while I was engaged in the process of creation, the earth seems to have lost its balance and fallen into the bottom of the ocean. What should we do?" He didn't know what to do, even though he's the creator of the universe. He didn't know what to do. He said, "Let us take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because He knows best what to do. And we'll bring up thought for a long time on what, how to take shelter and what to do and everything. So a long time for Brahma could be an extremely long time. But while he was thinking, a little something or other came out of his nostril. It was just a little boar. It was just the size of a thumb. Now, an intelligent person could ask, whose thumb? Well, Brahma's thumb. But anyway, still, proportionately, he was very small. And he immediately started to grow and expand himself. And as he grew and expanded himself, he also roared with his very deep, spiritually infused voice. And as he roared, all the demigods were delighted to hear that. And then he went, now, it's interesting to note, because we might think that the form of a hog is not particularly attractive. And we also might think it's not particularly advanced on the scale of advanced life. But we have to remember what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita? He says, Yada, Yada, Hi, Dharma, Sya. And what's the rest? I can't remember. You know what? Tadatmanam Srinjam. He comes every millennium to annihilate the miscreants and protect the devotees. He comes all the time. But he doesn't always come in his two-handed form as Krishna playing the flute. He comes in many, many unlimited forms. And we hear about a few of them. So he came at this particular time in this form of a boar. Why? Because the earth was in the water and he needed his little snout, his nose, and his little tusks to smell out where the earth was in the water. He took the form necessary to get the job done. So that's what he does. He takes different forms necessary to get the job done that he has to get done. So he had to search out the earth in the water, and so he took the form of a boar, a transcendental boar. Not a boring boar either. He was a transcendentally beautiful, attractive, supreme person, unlimitedly powerful, supreme personality of Godhead. And he expanded himself to a size. Now you can just imagine with our little teeny brains, right? How big Lord Varaha had to be in order to pick up the earth. He picked up the whole earth just as we're picking up a book or whatever. He picked up the whole earth on his nose. Because you know how boars have, they have long nose and then these little tusks. So the little tusks on the outside kept the earth from falling off the edge of his nose. So it sat there like a little ball on his nose. And he picked it up. So how big could he be? Quite huge would be a simple answer, right? But that's how big he was. And so when he picked up the earth from the ocean, Hiranyaksha appeared and started to fight with the Lord. And the description is there that they had a fight. The Lord slapped him and then pierced him with his tusk and killed the demon Hiranyaksha. So that's one story, one account. He actually picked the earth up, and as the demon was approaching him, he placed the earth on the top of the ocean, and he transferred to the earth his power, so the earth could float now on top of the ocean, because the earth was afraid. When the battle started, she was afraid. So he didn't want to be distracted. From fighting, so he put the earth on top of the ocean, transferred his unlimited power, and let the earth float on top now, and then he took his attention in turn towards Hiranyaksha. Now this story is also recounted later on in Srimad Bhagavatam, a few more chapters later, in a little bit more detail. But this story is now another millennium. This is now the Chakshusha millennium. And this Varaha is the red Varaha. So this story starts in darkness. Because Lord Brahma was creating the world And he does every day of his life. He has to create the world. Every day of the life, he has to create the world. So anyway, so he's creating the world and doing so many things necessary. So it was morning. The sun was up. He had already created the sun and everything. The sun was up. But things started to get dark. And they got darker. In the middle of the day, they got darker and darker and darker until it was pitch black. Now you've probably seen, have you had like lights flash in your eyes? And it's when the light flashes in your eye, even though it's light, it's so bright you can't see anything. Have you had the experience of being in a place where it's so dark you can't see anything either? I mean, anything? Sometimes on the dark moon night when you go out late at night, it is so dark you can't see anything. So this is the middle of the day. It got so dark. Nobody could see anything, so the demigods approached Lord Brahma and said, "My dear Lord, what is this darkness that's covering the universe? We're not able to do our duty." Now, Srila Prabhupada, in that purport, he says, that's the difference between demons and demigods. And you think, what's the difference? Huh, what? Well, he says, because the demigods, when they have a problem and they don't know what to do, they approach an authority. So they approached Lord Brahma at that particular time to ask, what's going on? What is this? And then whatever the authority says, then they follow that authority and they get guided by the light, you know, we could say, the instructions, the Vedic instructions. The demons also, they don't know what's going on, but they defy authority. They don't ask anybody anything. They don't care what effect anything has on anything, and they just defy the Supreme Lord and his instructions all the time. So the demigods are a saintly person. When they're bewildered, they approach someone and ask for guidance. That's a very important point, because even in our lives, so many things will happen, and not everything's going to be clear what to do with this, that, whatever. So whenever we have difficulties like that, we should practice. We should inquire from somebody, give us guidance. And it doesn't have to be just one person, but a few people that you respect that are a little more advanced, and to give guidance. They will always, Krishna will always help. He'll always help. Just like now, in this story, he'll always help when you ask for his assistance. So they approached Lord Brahma, what is this darkness? And Lord Brahma began to narrate the story of the four Kumaras. Anyway, he's going to get to the point, but when the four Kumaras were traveling to Vaikuntha, they went through many gates. How many gates did they go through? Many. Seven. They went through seven gates. They were so happy to be in Vaikuntha. They were looking all around, but they were looking not just at the scenery. They were looking for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. They hadn't seen him. First gate, second gate, third gate. Hadn't seen him. They went through the seventh gate. They approached the eighth gate, and who did they see? Two gatekeepers who had they looked the same. They looked the same age. But you know what? Because nobody's old in Vaikuntha, they're going to all look the same age because nobody gets old. Anyway, so they look the same age, and they're the same build and everything, and they all look like the Supreme Lord. They have four arms, but they were not standing like, you know, body language. There's friendly body language. And then there's like huffy, puffy body language. So they had huffy, puffy body language. They were, and they said, they took their maces and they went, "You can't enter here. Who are you? Why are you coming here? You can't enter. You can't just go anywhere." So they were totally taken aback, the four Kumaras. They were very surprised that persons were exhibiting that kind of attitude in the Vaikunthas. And so they said, "Who are these people that are exhibiting this discordant mentality?" Grouchy. You know, it's not a friendly mentality. It's not a loving mentality. It's, who are they? The Kumara said, they must be demons themselves. Because how could a demon enter Vaikuntha to begin with? A demon couldn't enter. It would be impossible. So they have this, they see duality. They see friends. Oh, he's my friend. He's my enemy. They're seeing duality, so they should go live in an atmosphere where there's friends and enemies. Have you noticed that we have a tendency to do that? We This is my friend, he's nice to me. This is my friend, she's nice to me. She looked at me in a funny way, so she's not my friend. We have to watch our mind when that happens. Because everyone's part and parcel of Krishna. We're all spirits. Krishna loves everyone. Anyway, aside from that. Okay, so the four Kumaras, they cursed him to go to the material world. And when Jnani Vijay heard that curse, it kind of woke him up. It snapped him out of their illusion. And they prayed, "Oh, we're so sorry that we didn't recognize you. It's right that you've cursed us. But we pray for a boon." And you know what the boon was that they prayed for? Do you know what the boon that Jnani Vijay prayed for? Any chance? Do you know? Okay, okay. They pray that we never forget the Lord, even as we go progressively downward. Even we have to go into the material world, may we never forget the Lord. So interestingly how that worked out. Anyway, so the Lord came and pacified everybody, but still, Jnani Vijay, because they were cursed by the Brahmins, they had to take birth in the material world. So here's where our story begins about Lord Varaha. There's plenty of time. So Jnani Vijay brothers took birth from Diti and Kasyapa. So they were twins, right? So in the same, this mother, she had the two children in the womb. Hiranyakashipu was conceived first. So he was in the womb first. Then Hiranyaksha was conceived second. So he came in the womb second. So then when it's time to be born, Hiranyaksha comes out first. And we would think, oh, he's going to be the eldest. But people who know the science of everything know that he's the youngest. He was conceived second. He came out first, and then the oldest came out second. Just an interesting little factoid, right? So Hiranyakashipu is the older brother and very, very powerful. And these both boys, they grew like mountains. Day by day, until they got to the point that they were so big, they blocked the sky. They blocked the sun. So Hiranyaksha took it upon him as the younger brother, who always is respectful and follows the wishes of his older brother. He took it upon him to create havoc throughout the universe. And he would go and disturb the Brahmins and do this and do that. And he once went to the Venu. He actually once went to the Garbhagak Ocean. He went to the Garbhagak Ocean, and he's there in the Garbhagak Ocean, and he's smashing the waves with his hands. You've probably done that maybe when you've gone to the beach, you know. The waves are coming in, you're smashing them and playing like that. So he was practicing his fighting skills in the Garbhagak Ocean, playing with the waves. And then he dove down in to Varuna's abode, because Varuna is the lord of the aquatics and all the aquatics. So he dove in and Prabhupada says, this is the nature of Varuna. Varuna's just there in his house, in the ocean, minding his own business. He's not looking for a fight. He's not agitating anybody. And Hiranyaksha comes and says, "Oh Lord, give me battle. He's mocking him. Lord, if I could battle you, then that'd be great." And Varuna says, "Oh, we've grown too old to fight. Better you fight with that supreme original person, because that supreme original person will be, then you'll meet your match and you'll be defeated by him." And so Hiranyaksha thought, that was a great idea. Let me go look for him. So he gets the information from Narada Muni, who's always telling everybody everything that they need to do in order to meet the Lord. He gets the information from Narada Muni, and he goes and searches out Lord Varaha. So at this particular point in the story, the earth had fallen now already. It already had fallen into the ocean. And Lord Varaha's there lifting the earth up out of the ocean. So we're coming into the story in a different place, but the same story. So Lord Varaha's lifting the earth up out of the ocean. And Hiranyaksha comes and challenges the Lord to fight. And at this particular point, the earth is frightened, so he puts the earth down on the Garbhagak ocean, invests in her his power to fight, and then Hiranyaksha and Lord Varaha begin their fight. But of course, as in every fight, they always start off with rough words, you know. When Hiranyaksha sees Lord Varaha, he says, "Oh, an amphibious beast! Oh, how horrible! But, you know, give us battle." And Lord Varaha says, I can't remember exactly what he says. He says, "Oh yes, we are indeed creatures of the forest," he says. "We are indeed creatures of the jungle, and we're searching out hunting dogs like you." And he says other things. And so they're fighting back and forth, and Hiranyaksha throws his mace with all his strength at the Lord's chest. And the Lord very adeptly, he steps aside. As the mace comes tracked right to his chest, he goes, boop, and it goes right by him. And that infuriates Hiranyaksha even more. So they're fighting back and forth. And then Hiranyaksha comes and he smacks the Lord on the chest. And because he smacked him so hard, the Lord dropped his clump, his mace. And it goes rolling down. And all the demigods that are watching, they think, "Alas, alas, may victory attend you. Pray no more. Pray some more, but pray dispatching. Pray no more with him." That's what they say. And so they're fighting back and forth, and so Hiranyaksha throws his mace at him again, and the Lord, defends himself. And then the Lord smashes Hiranyaksha on the head, but Hiranyaksha protected himself with a maneuver of his own. So they're going back and forth. It wasn't a quick thing. It wasn't like one or two blows and the thing was over. It went on for hours. It went on for hours, demigod hours. That's a long time, you know, demigod hours. So at a certain point, Lord Brahma comes on the scene. And he tries to whisper, and he says something. "Pray, dispatching, play no more with this villain. It's our good fortune that he's come on his own accord to us. He's been a pinprick." That was a nice thing to say about him. "He's been a pinprick to the demigods and all the pious beings throughout the universe for such a long time." He said, "This special time, when it's most auspicious to kill the demons, which is Abhijit, which is noontime, this lasts for a certain amount of time, this Abhijit time, it's almost over. If you wait any longer, it's going to be night, and the demons grow more powerful in the night. Pray, dispatching." And so the Lord thought, okay. And so he took his Sudarshan Chakra. Now he didn't kill the demon with his Sudarshan Chakra, but he took his Sudarshan Chakra, and that dissipated all the illusions that Hiranyaksha was manifesting, because demons love to, you know, shower stones and blood and pus on you while you're fighting, just so that you get distracted and it's easier to beat you. So he had done that. His oceans were coming, this and so many things. The earth was erupting, and so many things were happening. And the Lord took his Sudarshan Chakra and dispelled all that illusion. And when Hiranyaksha saw that, he became even more indignant. But at a certain point, the Lord finally comes and nonchalantly slaps him from the root of the ear, in the base of his ear there. And at that particular blow from the Lord, the demon started to roll around. His eyes bulged out, and he vomited blood, and he fell on the ground. His hair disheveled and everything. Everybody said, "Jai, Jai, Lord Meraki, Jai!" And then Lord Brahma came. Lord Brahma came and said, "Oh, what a glorious death." Because even he was had left his body, he was still shiny and bright. Now that's totally different from when most people leave their bodies. Because as soon as the soul leaves the body, all the brilliance in the body leaves also. And the body looks very gray and lack luster, no life or looking in your body. But here in Raksha, because he had been touched by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he remained brilliant and beautiful. He was beautiful in a demoniac way. And Lord Brahma was praising him. He had met such a glorious death to be killed by the Lord. So I'm just going to read you, okay? A few, let's see here. Yeah, okay. Couple verses here from the Bhagavatam so that we get. Okay, here's Brahma. Okay. Aja, Brahma, and others arrived on the spot to see the fearfully tusked demon lying on the ground, biting his lips. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, "Oh, who could meet such a blessed death?" Brahma continued, "He was struck by the forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies meditate upon in seclusion and mystic trance. While blazing on his countenance, this crushed jewel of deepest sun has cast off his mortal countenance. Now, remember the curse when the four Kumaras cursed Giant Vijay and they prayed for a boon? What was the boon that they prayed for? Yeah, to always remember Krishna. So then as we saw the story unfold, they were always remembering Krishna. Unfortunately, it was tinged with anger. But still, their boon was kept intact, and they were always thinking of him in anger. So, the verse continues, "These two personal assistants of the Supreme Lord, having been cursed, have been destined to take birth in demoniac families. After a few such births, they will return to their own positions." And the demigods offer prayers, but there's one verse. Here's the verse by Maitreya. Sri Maitreya continued, "After thus killing the most formidable demon, Hiranyaksha, the Supreme Lord Hari, the origin of the boar species, returned to his own abode, where there is always an uninterrupted festival." The Lord was praised by all the demigods headed by Brahma. So there's always an uninterrupted festival on Lord Varaha's planet. And by hearing, I could read the Shruti Falls too. Okay, I'll read the Shruti Falls and then we'll be finished. Okay. Shruti Falls. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear Brahman, the Kshatta, Vidura, the great devotee, achieved transcendental bliss by hearing the narrations of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the authoritative source, and he was very pleased. What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Sri Vatsa? People may take transcendental pleasure even hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal. The Personality of Godhead delivered the king of the elephants," what was his name? From the, who was attacked by the alligator, who, what was his name? Alligator. He was Hoo-Hoo, right? Yeah, King Hoo-Hoo. Who meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, the female elephants were coming and were crying, and the Lord saved them from the impending danger. What? Here's the point. Kritagya. What grateful soul is there who would not render his loving service to the great master as the personality of Godhead? The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection, though the unrighteous finds it difficult to propitiate him. O Brahmins, anyone who hears, chants, or takes pleasure in the wonderful narration of the killing of Hiranyaksha demon by the Lord, who appeared as the first boar in order to deliver the world, is at once relieved of the results of sinful activities, even the killing of a Brahmin. This most sacred narrative confers extraordinary merit, wealth, fame, longevity, and all the objects of one's desires. On the field of battle, it promotes the strength of one's vital organs and organs of action. One who listens to it at the last moment of his life is transferred to the supreme abode of the Lord. O dear Shonaka. Shri Varahadev Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go play in the Mandi.
No question, comment?
I didn't know this. You said we beg to differ. You said stop him at the same time. You're sitting there as you were speaking, but I said, you need to see me to stop him at the same time. I said, you don't know. Just show me the song.
Wait a minute, what? And you mean that? Does he read? Does he read? Okay.